Everybody, I'm Duncan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Duncan.
My sobriety date is August 25th, 2008. My home group is the Step Into the Promises meeting in Ashburn, Virginia. I have a sponsor. I sponsor other men and try to kind of stay in the flow and in the pocket. And through that, I get to often be happy and sober at the same time, which is like wild. And we'll see what I say. Kind of turn it over. If it's completely unhelpful to you, I hope you find somebody after the meeting who can be helpful to you. And I'm happy to be one of them. I'll say that I love AA, and I didn't always, and I get it if you don't. I definitely had my slip sign at points. And I, you know, what, where I'm at now, just to kind of jump to that for a second, I'll come back to what it was like. But just like most of my time is spent on like emotional sobriety type stuff, like quality problems. Like, man, I got to let go a little bit of a fear, or man, I wish I wasn't getting so frustrated with certain little situations, versus like, I can't not drink. Like I tattooed a sobriety date on myself and drank. Like I could not drink. And so like the quality of my problems, a friend is like, I have problems in areas I used to not have areas. And I like that perspective. And I like that, that's the deal for me. Like, I really appreciate being asked to come and speak, because it reminds me. And the other big thing is sponsoring people who are new, because it reminds me like, that's who I am. And like, even though, so like, there's this big like debate over recovered or recovering, and like both are right, basically. It's like, I'm recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. Like that one where like tattooed on myself, still drank, like just can't help it. Like that guy, I'm not that guy anymore, but I'm wired to be a selfish, self-centered, fearful jerk. And that stuff makes me like just restless, irritable, discontent, uncomfortable in my own skin. And like enough of that, and I'll probably drink again, and then all bets are off. And so like, I think both are true, right? Like I'm recovered and recovering, and my ego regrows constantly. And so if I'm not doing this, I have no chance of staying sober or staying happy and sober. Like I'll say that like I have the benefit of watching people have time, but not like emotional sobriety. And that is not interesting to me. I do not want that. It looks excruciating. And I've had moments where like I experiment myself and just like, let's see what it's like when I stop doing 86 through 88 for a while and just like really focus on me and like chase some money or something, or like really think about in my marriage how much like, you know, I'm really not getting mine as much as I should. Like the more time I spend there, the more I begin to just be that restless, irritable, discontent. Like I just need more, like I'm uncomfortable, versus when I'm just in the flow and I'm being a channel, all that stuff just kind of takes care of itself. And so I'm aware that my power steering goes out and I will just naturally drift. And so I kind of just need to stay sponsored and sponsoring and doing things when I'm asked. And so thank you for asking. So I grew up in I'm going to share my story. Some people will have similar experiences, some people won't, but like, hopefully there's some like language of the heart that you do identify with. And like, if you haven't heard your story, stick around, you will, right? But my particular story, like there was drinking in my house. I actually made a commitment to my mom and to myself that I would never drink when I was a kid. And I will never drink because I don't want to be like him. And what happened is I was sick one night. My mom gave me some NyQuil. It was nice. I got up and went back down the hall, found the same bottle. I drank more of it, like 11, 12 years old, something like that. Like not knowing that I was just like doing that, which felt good. More would be better. Went back and like, I just like fell asleep. Like just like slept. And like, that was something like I just like had never really done. Like it just like would lie in bed, even as a kid, and just like the hamster cage would just like come alive. And so like, I like the expression, like I didn't know how bad I felt until I didn't feel that way anymore. Mm-hmm. And like, just like that moment of freedom of just like, oh, that's not, this is an option. nice. And again, like I had, so I started kind of pursuing that without thinking that I had like gone back on any kind of promise to myself about like not drinking or not being that guy. And I started like mixing drinks at home with stuff that I could find and drinking it. And then my freshman year of high school, I got invited to a New Year's party. I didn't really go to parties a lot. Wasn't allowed to mostly, but went to this New Year's party and slept there. It was my first time drinking in public. Like I'd been doing a lot of homework, but this was my first like out in the field. And what was amazing to me is how these upperclassmen and these other people that I was really super uncomfortable with at the beginning of the night, because we just drank more and more together. They were my best friends, man. Like there was just like this camaraderie, and it was just, it was good. And it was, and like, I was awesome and they knew I was awesome and they were all, it was great. And then like, you know, slept somewhere and then woke up the next morning and like the magic was 100% gone. Like I didn't feel great. Didn't like any of these people. I wanted out, you know, and I couldn't drive. And so like, it was just like, it was an interesting phenomenon. And my takeaway was, oh, this stuff feels good at home and out in public. And like to sum up my high school experience, like I proceeded to kind of I found a group of people who I also played sports with who drank like I wanted to drink. And we all blacked out and we all threw up. And so like with this kind of band of brothers and reference points, I was like, I'm fine. Like I'm just a regular high school kid. I now have friends with high school kids and I watch them. And there's this one kid I've known since he was four. And I've been sober the whole time. I've watched him grow up and he's now at James Madison. He's in Young Life. He's just a good kid. He's a cross country runner. He has like never drank. He talks about being uncomfortable around people who are drinking. And I'm just like, huh. I would have told you like that didn't happen. And like, there's this kid just like living his whole life. And on the flip side of that, I have, my daughter is seven. She is friends with kids who are 11. And when I was 10 and 11 is when I started like smoking cigarettes. Like I was smoking Camels with my buddies at that age. And I was like starting to get into feeling different at home at that age. And like, they're babies. And like in my mind, so it's an interesting perspective to kind of shift all that stuff. But anyway, so for me at the time in high school, I didn't think that there was much to do with it. And like, I did do a lot of like how okay I was and how much of a man I was, like was correlated to how much I could drink and like how much pain I could withstand and like how I was doing in any competitive setting rather than like, who am I helping or any of those kinds of things. Or like I was afraid to express kind of fear and that kind of thing. And for me, you know, I realized at one point, like when I would walk towards my front door, like my shoulders would tense. Like it was just that kind of a vibe. And I wasn't really talking to anybody about anything. Like it was just, you know, stuffing feelings down and just like getting angry. And so went on to college with like a lot of driving drunk, a lot of blacking out, a lot of stuff like that, but never anything major, like a couple run-ins with cops, but like always going home after the run-ins with the cops. That was kind of high school. Fast forward to college, kind of more of the same, except like more extreme. I'm now just like, I'm really just about like being competitive and drinking a lot. My freshman year, we had a event where there was jungle juice and there was also funnels. I'm not sure if anyone's funneled beer, but they just, so there's beer funnels for beer. And then there was jungle juice for a like base thing and that kind of separate activity. And I was the only guy smart enough to put the grain in the funnel. And I've heard in meetings, people be like, you know, I just realized there's never enough to get me where I wanted to go. And I was like, hey, if you funnel some grain alcohol, like, you will get wherever you're looking for probably the hospital. And that's where I went. And after, so I went to the hospital. And when you go to the hospital and the school has to pay for it, you then have to talk to a counselor about why you went to the hospital for drinking. And so I sat down with her and like the opening conversation, she's like, well, hey, how much does it take you to get drunk? And I'm like, okay. Like thinking through how to calibrate this question, right? And and I'm like, I don't know, 6? And like, that's like, it was an intentionally low number to like satisfy her, like I'm annoyed. And she was like, 6. I was like, oh, what is it? And she was like, it should be about 3. And I'm like, 3? Who's drinking 3 drinks? Like, who's feeling anything at 3? And so like, it didn't get off well. But like, the problem was that like, in hindsight, we're all kind of laughing about it, but like, I really like the inability to differentiate the true from the false. Like I really, in that interaction, I was like, she's wrong. She doesn't understand. Like she doesn't get that like all of college kids everywhere are by her definition, like an alcoholic. Like she's completely off. But I got to know her and she was good. I had to see her for a little while and I committed to her that I would stop drinking. I stopped and I just started smoking a ton of marijuana. And like proved to myself and to her that like I don't have a problem with alcohol. And like, you know, marijuana is barely a drug. And in my mind at the time, for anyone who's new, this is not sobriety. But like this was like how I was justifying it at the time. Like, I'm just gonna smoke pot. And I smoked pot alcoholically. Like I just like did a ton of it and like just like used a lot of it, which is kind of high all the time. And then finally, after a couple few months, felt like I had done enough to like demonstrate that I am not, in fact, an alcoholic, so I should be drinking, and then start drinking again. The reason I bring her up is that, kind of fast forwarding a bit, at the end of my sophomore year, my mom and dad divorced. He left, and like instead of me being there to like support her, walk her through a hard time, she was like destroyed by it. I was just like, sweet. Like the house is mine. And so through a ton of parties, I also had back surgery that summer. And like, this was before anyone knew anything about OxyContin being any kind of like synthetic heroin. And so it was a summer where because of the surgery, I wasn't working. Like I used to work a lot of construction jobs in the summer. Wasn't working, just kind of hanging out and like not just drinking now, but also like popping all these pills that were available. And I was throwing all these parties. And so what I would do is I kept telling the doctor, like, hey, you know, we had a party. Someone must have stole it. Like, and so I just like kept getting the script refilled saying like, oh man, like these kids, I just can't trust them. Just stealing all. And so the reason I bring that summer up is that was the first time I experienced physical addiction. And at the time I thought that it was like a coincidence. That true from the false, like the lies we tell ourselves. I came up with the conclusion that I was getting flu-like symptoms when I ran out because it was good for, like, my immune system was stronger when I had the stuff that made me feel good. Like, my body was better when I had that stuff in me. And when I was running out of it, it was just, like, this natural compromised immunity versus, like, withdrawal. And it's kind of stupid. But, like, again, it wasn't until like pretty well into rehab that I was like, oh man, I have experienced those symptoms. And like, I guess they weren't flu-like. at the end of that summer, I had my first like really ready to be dead moment where I was just over it, like really over it. And that got my attention enough, especially since like my mom was a shell of a person and I had enough awareness of like, if I do kill myself, like she's gonna be dead, like ruined. And so I went and talked to a mental health professional. She said, don't drink and take Prozac. I was like, okay. And I went back to college and I announced to my teammates, like, I'm not gonna drink and I'm gonna take Prozac. And they kind of chuckled. And like a few weeks later, I was drinking. It was just like, no ability not to drink. Within a few months, I had I missed a team lift that was in the morning, and I was suspended from the team for having missed it. And when my captain came to find me, like, there were pee bottles all over the room, and like, I hadn't gotten up, and it was the afternoon, and he was just like, "Hey dude, like, what are you doing? Like figure it out. Like, we need you to figure this out." And he said the coach had suspended me from the team contingent upon a positive evaluation from the substance abuse counselor. So I went to go see the substance abuse counselor who had been appointed to me. And it was the same lady I'd seen freshman year. And she knew then that I had a problem. She definitely knew. And so she started me on this whole process of like, we'll try some controlled drinking. Like, let's see how you do. Like, prove to me that you're not. And like, just couldn't do it. Just really it was the first time I was like, wow, like I really can't do this. Like one night in particular, I set out to prove her wrong. And like, it ended up like this big, like Coke binge, which wasn't even like a huge thing for me. It was just like, no control. And after a series of conversations, she said something that really landed where she said like, hey, like if you think it's hard to stop now, like it's just going to get harder. And like, you've told me before that you don't want to be like your father. And like, you have no choice if you just keep going down this road. And that kind of woke me up. And then a few other things happened to woke me up. And so finally I agreed to go to treatment. And in treatment, like I learned all about, it was a really good facility. I got a very good education on alcoholism and all the other kind of therapy treatment stuff. And they grounded in AA too. Like they took us out to AA meetings. They said like, this is going to be what you need to stay sober, like all that. And I just wasn't into it. Like just, I knew I wasn't going to be that into AA. Got out of that treatment. And pretty quickly after that, I was like, okay, so I know how to be sober. I just smoke pot. And so I start, like I went back to that and then would like go back to drinking and like, just like, it was this whole like kind of rigmarole. This one night in particular, I woke up kind of having had blacked out, had thrown up, and there was blood in my puke. And that always kind of got my attention. Like, hey, normal shenanigans probably don't have like pukey blood, like on wake up. And I did that a lot, by the way. Like I like puked on myself when I slept a lot, and like people die that way. And like, like for me, it was just that kind of thing. Like I literally, like there were times where I would wake up to it and just move my pillow, and then go back to sleep. And now, like, that is disgusting. Like, I get thrown up on now as a dad from time to time. Like it's really gross. It was just crazy that I was just settled into that. You know, like that's just my life. So it got my attention and I didn't want to go back to AA because I wasn't into it. It was very churchy for me. And I got this, you know, that's kind of like words that kill a lot of alcoholics. I got this. And I'm proud enough that like, so my solution was I tattooed that day on my arm as my sobriety date, because it would be so inordinately stupid for me to have a big tattoo on my arm and have it not be my sobriety date. But I celebrated with a couple friends and like this huge joint. I was just like, guys, I'm now committed to just like a much cleaner way of life, just pop. And went from there to like, just like slowly ratcheting it up, like over this course of a period of time. Like I was just like, okay, well, I'll just do some other stuff with it. I won't do like, I won't bump this. I'll just put it in my gums. Like I'll ingest it otherwise. I'll just like, instead of bumping it, I'll swallow it like a vitamin almost. Like it's not even doing drugs at that point. And then finally, like I caught myself where like I had done enough of that stuff to realize like, hey, this is all BS anyway. I might as well be drinking. And then I started drinking again. And so it's just like that, like, I can't trust my own brain. That's a big part of why I still need to be sponsored, still need to be around other people in AA. So I started drinking again with the sobriety date tattoo on my arm. Got into a, so I barely got out of college, but I did. Got into a relationship with a girl who was getting her she's becoming an MD in psychiatry, or a PhD in psychiatry. She's getting her doctorate in psychiatry. And it was interesting that she would like choose to have a relationship with me. And going into a relationship with someone who's in touch with mental health, when like you're trying to explain the sobriety date tattoo, it's like an interesting discussion. Like, oh, yeah, I overreacted at the time. And so we had a tumultuous relationship, and like there were plenty of times where like my drinking was a huge issue, and like same as before, like I would promise her that I would only have so many drinks, I would have more. I would be like, well, I'm not drunk. Like I'm still like just kind of buzzed. Like it shouldn't count that I didn't do what I told you I wouldn't do. And I would get this headache when I would stop drinking. And so I'd be like, hey, like, I have a headache for you. And like, she would be like, what is wrong with you? The day before what is now my sobriety date, and hopefully stays my sobriety date, she went up to visit her parents, and I had promised her that I would not drink that weekend. And I wasn't interested in drinking that weekend. Like when I promised her that Friday morning or Thursday, whenever I promised it to her, like 100% meant it. Pass a lie detector test. I'm not interested in drinking this weekend. I will not drink because I do not want to drink. I'm so over drinking. It's been like exhausting. My body's tired. I just want to hang out, like play video games or something. And that, the Friday of that promise, I went to lunch at work and I was like, I'll get a quesadilla. And I was like, you know, if I have a quesadilla, I should have a beer just because it pairs well. Like it just, you know, like literally that was like my justification. Like you can't have a quesadilla and not have a beer. And then I gave myself permission before I even made the order, I switched it to a double vodka Red Bull. And then I had three more double vodka Red Bulls. And then I went back to my office, started getting my headache. And I was like, I'm going to go get some Sparks. I had a six pack of Sparks. And then I drove home to hang out with my sister for a little bit before I went out and drank in DC. And like, again, in hindsight, that's insane. But like, it never even occurred to me that I'd broken a promise that whole time. It was just like, I'm just doing this now. And we were talking on the drive down, like still wired to just do things. Like I've seen Spinal Tap, like 11. Like that's just the way I'm always. And like, hopefully like with God's help, like I can harness that to be productive and good. And like, I can help other people's at 11. I can be a good dad at 11. Yeah, I could be a good employee at 11. But like I drank at 11. And so I would double fist, you know, triple bourbon Cokes and just like slam them. And so I drank a lot. And apparently I had a conversation with the girl that I had promised that I wouldn't drink that weekend. And then puked at my buddy's house, removed my shirt to clean up the puke, which really, like, as it was later described to me, just like kind of smeared it around and then left a dirty shirt. And then got in the car and drove home. And at 4 a.m., I got arrested on the side of the road. And I blew a pretty high BAC, especially considering I had puked like a ton. And so like that all in context is just like, yeah, like I like objectively had a monster problem with alcohol. But I had concluded that before too, right? Like I had a sobriety date tattoo on me when I was arrested. But I think something just kind of clicked. Like I was kind of browned out. Like I remember some stuff, don't remember other stuff. I remember not fitting well in the back of the cop car. I remember they didn't give me a shirt for a long time. And so I had the opportunity in the tank to like look at that tattoo a lot, which had been like 5 years previous. I was living in my mom's basement. I had negative $40,000 and just kind of hated myself and was just really, really done and like really very in touch with the fact that I couldn't drink, that I didn't know how to control my own life, like beyond the dash, right? Powerless over alcohol, that our lives are unmanageable. I had both. And as much as I hated AA. I didn't like the happiness here, I think. Like I didn't like the smiles and the, hey, give me a hugs, and like just wasn't into it. And like I hated it. And it felt like, reminded me of like old church activities and old like Boy Scouts activities. And I kind of turned my back on all that stuff and I didn't like it. And it like irritated me. But in that moment of like desperation, I was like, you know, they were happy and sober in that room. And I'm out of ideas and I'm going to try it maybe. I called my mom to come pick me up. At like 4 p.m. the next day, having been arrested at 4 a.m. And I was sure that she was going to be furious. Like she gets that automated robot voice of like, you know, a collect call from the detainee. And she was like, oh, thank God. Like it was August and she was convinced that her boy was finally dead. Like she'd had all these nights of like wondering where I was. And this was one where she like knew the fact pattern was like I had left the house in D.C. at 4 a.m. She was sure that I had either just like passed out on the side of the road or got into a car accident and was just sitting somewhere, anywhere between DC and Virginia on the side of the road, just cooking. Like she just knew that I was dead. And so when she heard from her boy, she was thrilled that I was in jail, like thrilled. Showed up with a sandwich and a big jug of water and was just like, and like a friend from an old home group would be like, hey, like people talk about enablers and like kind of hate that term. She loved me. And like, I dig that. Like my mom loved me very much. And like, I put her through a lot of shit and it's on me, not her. Sorry for cursing. So I slept for a while and then she kind of came down and said, hey, so what are you thinking? And I was like, I think I'm gonna go back to AA. My car had been impounded. And so I got on my bike, which I had not ridden in years, and like biked to an AA meeting. And if you show up like really sweaty at an AA meeting and like they don't know who you are, you will get a lot of attention at that AA meeting. And so like I still didn't particularly like AA, but I was going and I was out of ideas. And like I went enough to finally kind of find some people that I started to really relate to and like be interested in. And I'd had this idea that like my first sponsor was gonna be like he's gonna have three cars and just like trophy wife and like, boom, like I'm gonna go chase. I'm gonna finally have that negative 40,000 be positive something. And just, you know, that's who I wanted as my sponsor. He was gonna like teach me how to make money. And this dude in the second week of meetings, like had this way about him. He was completely comfortable in his own skin. The way he described his day, how he had gone through it, how he was going through it now, where like kind of like a really short version of what we just read, like what it was like, and just like he clearly had a solution that worked. And this dude had like prison tattoos, was a mechanic, like nothing against being a mechanic, but like he was not the guy I had imagined. You know, he had like natty dreads. Girlfriend was like a weird hippie that like I was like was not like none of it fit my preconceived notion. But I wanted this guy to teach me how he did what he was doing. And like I talked to him after the meeting and I asked him, like, the reason I bring that up is like that was like my first little mini third step of like not about my preconceived ideas, like we'll see what God's got in store. And like I didn't even have a working idea of God at the time, but I was just like open to what this thing was going to look like. He was an awesome sponsor for me. He worked me through the fifth step. He was there for me. Like he took all the crazy calls of just early and just like I remember he's from Luckett's and he had this awesome way about him. And he like I called him furious because I was just uncomfortable in my own skin and uncomfortable in my still fighting the compulsion early. I probably had 2 months. I was like, I've been doing this for 2 months, I haven't drank for 2 months. That's like I'm like doing everything I'm supposed to do. I'm saying that serenity prayer. Just like I'm like machine gunning him with all the things I'm doing. And I'm like, but I'm still like, I hate this. I feel uncomfortable. Like I'm ready to like, remember that conversation, just like dumping venom on him. And he kind of interrupted my blah, 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 blah with like, just like that. He goes, "Hey, buddy, time takes time." And I was like ready to break my phone. But he was there for me through all of that. And like with him, like I started to experience some of those third step promises, some of the fifth step promises. And I was like, okay, this is great. Like he's my guy. And then he went and hiked the Appalachian Trail. He's like, I'm going to through hike it. Like I've wanted to do it for a long time. You should get a new sponsor. And for a couple, like, I think it was like four to 5 weeks, I was like finding the new sponsor. Like, I'm going to take my time and make sure it's the right sponsor. And, you know, I've just done my fifth step, so I'm probably in pretty good shape. And that was like probably the most reckless thing I've ever done in sobriety. Mm-hmm. Like that was like a really scary time. I got really uncomfortable, really crazy, bless you both. And finally, like if this is going to get you in trouble with your sponsor, like please talk to your sponsor about it. But I was dating a girl in the first year of sobriety. And she was an AA and I was an AA. I know like some people think that's verboten, but I talked like, you know, whatever. So like, she was like listening to all my crazy and she screamed at me like, get a sponsor, which was good advice. And so I went and I got a guy who took me through, like, who really started to work on me with me through like the first period of my sobriety, like the first several months was just about like not drinking. Like that was a huge deal. And then when I was able to, like the compulsion had kind of left, I wasn't really thinking about, like, I wasn't like actively fighting like the car steering to a store. I was still a whole lot of crazy, you know? And so that was where like a lot of unpacking needed to be done. Like I ended up doing more inventories and like really starting to lead in to like helping other people. Like it's not about me. Like realizing how crazy selfish, self-centered I am. Getting in touch with this truth in the book that like selfishness, self-centeredness, we think is the root of our problem. Like I would have told you that like the root of my problem was like an addictive personality or something, you know? But like the root of my problem is that I'm selfish and self-centered. And even if I'm not drinking, I'm still selfish and self-centered if I'm not doing everything I can to not be. As Flynn would say, like my 1%, God's got 99%. I've got my 1%. I've got to do my 1%. And then he was like, I might be stretching it at 1%, but I've got to do my part. And so that took me through a period of time where a lot of chasing, right? Like I discovered, like, it took a while to start inviting God into an AA into like all of my affairs. And I feel like there were kind of like these iterative surrenders of like, okay, I'll give you my drinking and my drugging. And then I was like, okay, I'll give you relationships. You know, and that was really hard. And then, unfortunately for me, like usually it involved like driving something into the ground before I was like willing to give it over. And I think like over time, I started to realize that, like, oh, like this is just easier. This, like, I should surrender this much sooner. And it was also the period of time where I started like helping other people. Like the first time I heard a fifth step was a huge awakening for me. Like the first time I belly laughed sober and like cried belly laughing sober was another huge, like, I didn't think that was possible sober. And so like those things all kind of happened in those early years. And that was really, really powerful for me. And then like there was this really helpful thing right around 4 or 5 years where like I had this huge AA ego. And a friend turned me on to this talk on emotional sobriety by Tom Brady Jr., who's not that Tom Brady. He's like, you know, he's passed, but he's got this great talk on emotional sobriety. You should find his tape if you haven't heard it. But basically, he talks about being stark raving sober and like the ego that can build an AA and like the importance for surrenders beyond surrenders, and started to get into some of that. And it was hugely freeing. And I'm really grateful for that. And So with relationships, like, you know, I had this conversation with my sponsor and I finally like said this huge third step prayer of like, hey, like maybe I'll end up single. Maybe I'm just not meant to be in a relationship. That's cool. And like, and I really had this like huge surrender, like, okay. Like, cause I'd always had this preconceived idea of what things were supposed to look like. And I really turned it over. And like a month after that, I ended up meeting Annie, who is now my wife. And I think the timing is interesting because if I had not done it in that order, I would have run into the ground, or like I would have like overreacted, or I would have ended it early because I was afraid or something. You know, it's, but just like to be able to be like, hey, like it is what it is. And when we started dating, I talked to my sponsor about it, who's now my sponsor still, and we both know who he is, and he's a great guy. And like his advice horrified me. He was like, hey, you know what you should pray? Go home tonight and pray to God. Like, hey, if this is meant to be, let it meant to be. And if it's not meant to be, just end it immediately. Like, let it be done. And I like didn't want to say the words because I was like, hey, if this is not meant to be, I would rather it last for a period of time because like, I'm interested in her and I'll take a month, you know? And so it was one of those like slow surrenders, but I finally did. I did start saying that. I did start meaning it and like letting it go. And like, you know, I think that there's been a lot of that. And the reason I bring all that up is like, we were talking before the meeting on the drive down about practicing these principles in all my affairs. Now, it's not just like looking okay in an AA meeting. It's about like going and like love and tolerance of others is our code. That's a hard, hard challenge, really. Others, all others, love and tolerance. How are we doing on that, everybody? You know, like I fall short all the time. And so like to realize like that's kind of my charge, like to go be about it and like truly radically love people and forgive people. And what does that look like? I'll say that I want to mention a lot of people share these miraculous 9-step stories. I think it's also worth sharing the opposite, where like, so I went and tried to do a 9-step with my father, tried to have a restored relationship with him. And like my wife and I came to the conclusion that he was an unhealthy person for our children to be around. And like, I haven't talked to him in a couple few years. I didn't do that quickly or impulsively. I did that over a lot of conversations with my sponsor and like slow built, but like, I think it's not all sunshines and rainbows, right? Like my stepfather died of cancer and it really sucked. It was sad. And like, I have sponsored 2 different men who have died. And that's hard. And like this disease kills people. And so like, I think it's easy to get up and just talk about kind of like, hey, it's all sunshine and rainbows, but it's really not. But like, what's amazing to me is that like, regardless of circumstance, I have the option of being some degree at serenity or peace. Even if the circumstances suck, and the flip side is also true. Like even if the circumstances are great, if I'm seeking chaos and full of my own self, I can be miserable, even though my bank account might be better than it's ever looked or like whatever else. Like the circumstances are truly irrelevant to a large degree beyond like the extremes, right? And so as far as like practicing these principles in all of my affairs, I'll say that like, it is a huge deal to me that I have the ability to not drink or drug. And that really, generally speaking, and like I've had surgeries, I've had abdominal umbilical hernias. I've had some other surgeries and like they'll give you medicine for those. And like with my sponsor's directions, like, hey, like that's medicine. That's actually when you're supposed to take it. Like, so like do what the doctor says, don't have control of your own script. But like when that stuff goes into my body, like the light switch goes and I'm just like, I'm a big guy. I need more of this. And so like, I'm always going to be kind of wired that way. And so I kind of need to be on the lookout for it, but I also need to be surrendering beyond surrenders. And like, so there's that miracle, like that first order miracle is huge to me that I generally don't really think about it. Like I'm not fighting the drink or the drug today, but like these second order miracles to me are like as big or bigger. As far as like the ability to have a healthy relationship is a huge deal to me. Like that's crazy to me that I'm that guy for now, right? Like just like no ego there. Like I'm not like white as snow, you know, but like so far, it's been pretty solid. We've been married for about 10 years. And we have three kids. And the way we had those kids is kind of alcoholic. We had three kids within 30 months. None of them are twins. And and that's a lot. And that was a really, that was another really hard time. So like kind of navigating, you know, who we are in a relationship, how we are both kind of like imprinted with all these kind of family things and preconceived ideas, and then also figuring out how to be parents along the way, and how that whole thing is also fraught with that same kind of, it's like, it is as miraculous to me that I can, so you know, the whole not drinking piece that I was just talking about, like that is a huge deal to me. It is as big of a deal to me that like the other night, my son, I asked him three or four times to just put on his pajamas calmly, nicely. And he was just like rolling around naked. And like, and I just left the room and took a deep breath and asked God for help and came back in and said, hey, Cal, put your pajamas on, rather than like smacking them or like throwing them or like, and like, that is as big of a deal to me as like not drinking. Like the old, like, and like to realize that like my higher power is big enough for these surrenders beyond surrenders, and like to keep getting better and growing and like practicing. Cause like me, as I thought I would have known myself, especially when I came in, like not even remotely capable of love and tolerance of others, like just period. And she also, it's choppy though. I got feedback 3 months ago at work that there were two people in particular who felt like disrespected by me. And when I was told which two people they were, I was like, oh, that checks out. Cause I think that they're both dummies. Like really, like just like I don't respect them. And like where am I with love and tolerance of others? You know, like sucking, you know? And so so then to realize like, hey, like I need to treat, I had this failure of perspective at the time where I'm juggling all these balls. I'm doing my best. I'm doing a good job. Like I'm doing I don't need to be nice to you because I'm right. And so to be receptive to that feedback and to like hear that and be like, man, like I'm falling down. I'm like, and I am not treating work like a service position. Like I'm treating work like an ATM or like a self-esteem sweepstakes. Like, hey, how do I feel about myself today? And since getting that feedback, since getting some other kind of like feedback, and just like I led a meeting for a good friend of mine and I just didn't feel particularly connected during it. And it was, and I actually asked my sponsor who heard it. He was like, that was fine, but it's an interesting like indicator light for you. Like you should like, and so like kind of like really like doubled way down. I'm like I never stopped sponsoring people. And I never stopped going to meetings, but like I was doing a lot of travel for work. And I kind of like gave myself permission to get out of some healthy routines. I'm 86 to 88 in the morning, 86 to 88 in the evening, phone calls. And just like, so I was doing enough to get the feedback, but I wasn't doing enough to get like that relief and that like connection to a higher power that like ultimately like keeps me sober. And so getting back into that, I found pretty consistently that if I'm doing all those things for at least a few weeks, I was good again. It's really funny how that goes. And what's particularly funny is how often I need to be reminded of that, because I will like give myself this sneaky permission, just like, hey, you know what? I've done this for a long time. So like, I've been really busy. I'm really tired. I'm just going to go to bed. And it's not like I'm doing anything. It's not like I'm like going to gamble or anything. Like I'm just like, I've worked really hard all day. You know, like I'm tired. And like, I just like wrestled three kids to sleep. And like, I just like need a minute. And we were talking on the drive down again about, it was a long drive. We're talking on the drive down about like the irony of this indulgence, right? Like one of the things I really like is this concept of freedom through discipline, which is, sounds weird to me. Like discipline does not sound appealing to me, but like freedom I like. And like freedom through discipline sounds like an impossibility, but like that's really the jam. And the opposite is also true. Like I think of it as like I'm indulging myself. Like I'm just going to go easy for a little bit. Like I don't need, like I've been working really hard. I can let up on the spiritual way of life because it takes some time. You know, the whole simple but not easy. And that's the irony. Is like when I indulge like that, like I get more uncomfortable. And like I not only do I get more uncomfortable, like I'm a jerk. I'm more likely to lose my temper with my kids, with my coworkers, with my wife. I'm more likely to be like a real scorekeeper with her. Just like, hey, and I'm a bad scorekeeper too. Like so much so like she's like starting to keep track of certain things on her calendar so that she can be like, nope. Like actually it has not been 2 weeks. And like and so like with all that, like when I'm on the beam and like being of service, I'm not scorekeeping and I'm not tracking and I'm not playing the director and I'm not telling you your part. And life's just so much more easy. And so I'll sit like I'll kind of close. I am ready to close. I'll just close early, but like I'll close with this and that, like I came in and it was kind of all stick and no carrot. Like I was over the way I was living my life. I was not stoked about going to jail. And I had to go to jail. Like it was my first DWI, but it was big enough that I got sentenced to like 25 days. And so like, I was not stoked about that. And I was not stoked about like being a piece of crud that was living in my mom's basement. So it was all like, I'm just sick of this. But there was no active chase. Like I wasn't excited about any new life. Frankly, I was like, I really like not drinking for the rest of my life seemed like sucky. Like just did like not the drinking was working out for me, but just like was not at all excited about like, okay, so just every day and then I die, never drunk or high again. You know, like I was just not stoked. All stick. And so over time, like getting the kind of like those spiritual experiences, those freedom elements, like these are silly little things, but they're meaningful to me. One is like, so like the first, I used to go to this mountain. I actually hike out here a lot. And I came out here when I was single and I come out here now with kids, but like when I would come out here single and be sober and see like a sunrise or a sunset, like from a mountaintop, like, that was a really powerful experience. And what was interesting is I would do that stuff when I was like getting messed up. And I remember thinking like, man, like sunrise or sunset is not going to be as special if I'm not faded. And like, wrong. Like you can see colors and it's like pretty amazing. It's like more amazing. Same thing with concerts. Like, I came in, I was like, man, like there's no way I'm going to enjoy a concert if I can't be messed up. It's like, you hear all the songs. And it's having these kind of like, man, like this isn't the end of the world. And what was interesting for me is like early on, especially like I started to get really excited about that stuff. And it had nothing to do with outside circumstances. Still had like no money. Was like barely putting myself through a degree and was renting a room. It's like my material, like there was no particular, like it was nothing like what I was thinking was going to make me feel okay. And I started to get this like, man, like this is cool. Like I started to like chase sober living. I started like wanting that. And around the same time, like there was a guy who had lived in Maryland for a long time. His job took him out to Sterling. He met me because I was sentenced to a whole slew of things. And like one of them was this ADS class. And he met me at that ADS commitment. He took a commitment to an institution and he met me there. And he became my running buddy. He's like, hey, like, you're going to have a lot of sponsors probably over the course of your sobriety. Like, you'll have fewer friends. I'm going to be your friend, not your sponsor. And like, we became running buddies. We drove all over the place. Mm-hmm. And we got the meeting before the meeting. We got the meeting after the meeting. And that was another big part of like switching to the carrot. Like, his life was appealing to me. Like the way he was able to talk about things was appealing to me. A friend of mine talks about like the John Wayne bullshit and like the importance of just throwing away the John, like all these old ideas about like how masculinity is supposed to look, how I'm supposed to talk about myself and other things, how I'm supposed to deal with fear. And this dude, the way he would just be like, you know, guys, I was super feared up today. just kind of like let go of some of that stuff, man, it really changed my, I was just like, dude, you can just like talk about that stuff, let it go, like, what happened? And like realizing that I've been like, you know, cutting the strings, like this evil corrosive thread of fear. Like I was a fear puppet, man. I could just like, wonk, wonk, you know, and I realized that I don't have to be pre-programmed or like dictated by all that stuff. Like that was all, like I really started to chase that. And so I think there's that whole carrot versus stick. And like people say, like, don't quit before you experience the miracle, that kind of thing. Like sobriety really does get a lot easier. It did for me anyway, got a lot easier as soon as it started to be something that I was chasing. It's like, I'm very good at chasing something I think is going to make me feel better. And that's where it kind of, the switch flipped for me of like, this thing is going to make me feel better. I keep chasing it. And now I think the other big thing for me is just like making sure that that ego doesn't crop up and kill me, because it really will. Or one of those surgeries, you know, that's the other thing. Like just like as soon as somebody puts that in my body, like I am at risk. And so we have a whole bunch of protocols in place. Like if I do have a surgery, if like I don't control any of that, and like my sponsor needs to be involved, and just because it is real free. Like as soon as it comes into play, I'm a different person. Like right after the umbilical surgery, it was pretty painful, and the nurse had not read my chart and gave me Dilaudid, and I was just like,
yes.
Yeah. And it's like the monster is there, right? Like I am still that guy, and whether it's like presenting itself in like my relationships or presenting itself in like the physical chase, like I'm still going to be wired that way. But with God's help and with the help of AA, like I can funnel the chase and like helping other people and like trying to be a better dad. And like, at least for right now, trying to eat kind of clean. Like that's one that goes all over the place for me. But like, you know, for right now, like, hey, like I'd like to feel better. And so grateful to be chasing the carrot rather than running from the stick at this point. And grateful to be fighting the ego, popping up. So thanks for having me share.
Yeah.